It'll be cool and breezy through the morning with variable amounts of cloud, some sunshine, but also a scattering of showers from early on. And we keep that mix of sunny spells and showers on into the afternoon, with temperatures around about 7 or 8 degrees. Thursday night into Friday, well, for England and Wales, turns wet, windy, maybe even some snow.
All right, many thanks. Now on BBC Radio 4, time for our Book of the Week. The inspiration for Steve McQueen's BAFTA award-winning film, Solomon Northup's memoir, 12 Years a Slave, is an eloquent account of the realities of slavery and racism in 1850s America. Kidnapped from the free state of New York, Solomon has been sold to a plantation owner in the Deep South. The reader is Rashaan Stone.
Our master's name was William Ford. He resided then in the great pine woods on the right bank of Red River, in the heart of Louisiana. There never was a more kind, noble, candid, Christian man than William Ford. The influences and associations that had always surrounded him blinded him to the inherent wrong at the bottom of the system of slavery. Looking through the same medium with his fathers before him, he saw things in the same light. Nevertheless, he was a model master, and fortunate was the slave who came to his possession. On our passage, I was constantly consulting with myself on the best course to pursue in order to effect my escape. Sometimes I was almost on the point of disclosing fully to Ford the facts of my history. This course was often considered, but through fear of its miscarriage, never put into execution. Afterwards, under other masters, unlike William Ford, I knew well enough the slightest knowledge of my real character would consign me at once to the remoter depths of slavery. I was too costly a chattel to be lost, and was well aware that I would be taken farther on into some by-place over the Texan border, perhaps, and sold, that I would be disposed of as a thief disposes of his stolen horse, if my right to freedom was even whispered. So I resolved to lock the secret closely in my heart, never to utter one word or syllable as to who or what I was, trusting in Providence and my own shrewdness for deliverance. Ford's house was two stories high, with a piazza in front. In the rear of it was also a log kitchen, poultry house, corn cribs, and several Negro cabins. We were employed in piling lumber and chopping logs. Ford's overseer was a Mr. Chapin, a kindly disposed man. One John M. Tebeats, a carpenter, came to do some work on Master's house. John M. Tebeats was the opposite of Ford in all respects. He was a small, crabbed, quick-tempered, spiteful man. He had no fixed residence that I ever heard of, but passed from one plantation to another wherever he could find employment. He was without standing in the community, not esteemed by white men, nor even respected by slaves. In common with others, Mr. Chapin held Tebeats in light estimation, which fact was fortunate for me. William Ford, unfortunately, became embarrassed in his pecuniary affairs. He was also indebted to John M. Tebeats to a considerable amount in consideration of his services. It was therefore necessary, in order to meet these demands, to dispose of 18 slaves, myself among the number. I was sold to Tebeats in consequence of my slight skill as a carpenter. The price agreed to be given for me being more than the debt, Ford took a chattel mortgage of $400. I am indebted for my life, as will hereafter be seen, to that mortgage. I was now compelled to labor very hard. From earliest dawn until late at night, I was not allowed to be a moment idle. Notwithstanding which, Tebeats was never satisfied. He was continually cursing and complaining. I was his faithful slave and earned him large wages every day, and yet I went to my cabin nightly, loaded with abuse and stinging epithets. One morning, Tabitz came out of the house to where I was, hard at work. He seemed to be even more morose and disagreeable than usual.
"I thought I told you to commence putting on weatherboards this morning," he remarked.
"Yes, master, and I am about it," I replied.
"Where?"
he demanded. "On the other side," was my answer. He walked round to the other side, examined my work for a while, muttering to himself in a fault-finding tone.
"Didn't I tell you last night to get a keg of nails off Chapin?"
he broke forth again.
"Yes, master, and so I did. An overseer said he would get another size for you, if you wanted him, when he came back from the field."
Tabitz walked to the keg, looked a moment at the contents, then kicked it violently. Coming toward me in a great passion, he exclaimed,
"God damn you, I thought you knowed something."
I made answer, "I tried to do as you told me, master. I didn't mean anything wrong. Overseer said..." But he interrupted me with such a flood of curses that I was unable to finish the sentence. At length, he ran towards the house, and going to the piazza, took down one of the overseer's whips. At first I was somewhat frightened, and my impulse was to run. I knew he intended to whip me. It was the first time anyone had attempted it since my arrival at Ford's plantation. I felt, moreover, that I had been faithful, that I was guilty of no wrong whatever. My fear changed to anger, and before he reached me, I had made up my mind fully not to be whipped. Let the result be life or death. Winding the lash around his hand, he walked up to me, and with a malignant look, ordered me to strip. "Master Tabitz," said I, looking him boldly in the face, "I will not." He sprang upon me, seizing me by the throat with one hand, raising the whip with the other in the act of striking. I caught him by the collar of the coat, seized him by the ankle, and pushing him back with the other hand, he fell over on the ground. Putting one arm around his leg and holding it to my breast so that his head and shoulders only touched the ground, I placed my foot upon his neck. He was completely in my power. My blood was up. I snatched the whip from his hand. I cannot tell how many times I struck him. Blow after blow fell fast and heavy upon his wriggling form. At length, he screamed, cried, "Murder!" And at last the blasphemous tyrant called on God for mercy. But he who had never shown mercy did not receive it. The stiff stock of the whip warped round his cringing body until my right arm ached. I struck him a blow or two more, then pushed him from me with such a well-directed kick that he went rolling over on the ground. Rising to his feet, he stood looking at me, pale with rage. We gazed at each other in silence. Not a word was uttered until Overseer Chapin galloped up to us.
"What is the matter?" he cried out.
"Master Tabitz wants to whip me for using the nails he gave me," I replied.
"What is the matter with the nails?"
he inquired, turning to Tabitz. Tabitz made no reply, but grinding his teeth and shaking his fist, swore he would have satisfaction, and that it was not half over yet. Thereupon he walked away. When he was gone, Chapin charged me with great earnestness not to run, saying my master was a rascal, that he had left on a no-good errand, and that there might be trouble before night. But at all events, he insisted upon it. I must not stir. For at least an hour, I remained in this situation, when looking up, I beheld Tabitz accompanied by two horsemen coming down the bayou. They rode into the yard, jumped from their horses, and approached me with large whips, one of them also carrying a coil of rope.
"Cross your hands," commanded Tabitz.
One of his companions then stepped forward, swearing if I made the least resistance, he would cut my black throat. Thereupon, Tabitz tied my wrists. Then he bound my ankles in the same manner. With a remaining piece of rope, Tabitz made an awkward noose and placed it about my neck. Hope died within my heart. Surely my time had come. At length, as they were dragging me toward the tree, Chapin, who had momentarily disappeared from the piazza, came out of the house and walked toward us. He had a pistol in each hand and spoke in a firm, determined manner. "Gentlemen, whoever moves that slave another foot from where he stands is a dead man. In the first place, he does not deserve this treatment. It is a shame to murder him in this manner. You, Tabitz, are in the fault yourself. You are pretty much of a scoundrel, and you richly deserve the flogging you have received. In the next place, I have been overseer on this plantation 7 years, and in the absence of William Ford, am master here. My duty is to protect his interests. Ford holds a mortgage on Platt of $400. If you hang him, he loses his debt. Until that is canceled, you have no right to take his life. You have no right to take it anyway. There is a law for the slave as well as for the white man. You are no better than a murderer." Tabitz, evidently in fear, and overawed by the decided tone of Chapin, sneaked off like a coward, as he was, and mounting his horse, followed his companions. I remained standing where I was, still bound, with a rope around my neck. At sunset, my heart leapt with unbounded joy as Ford came riding into the yard, his horse covered with foam. Chapin met him at the door, and after conversing a short time, he walked directly to me. "Poor Platt, you are in a bad state." Drawing a knife from his pocket, he indignantly cut the cord from my wrists, arms, and ankles, and slipped the noose from my neck. I attempted to walk, but staggered like a drunken man, and fell partially to the ground. Ford returned immediately to the house, leaving me alone again. As he reached the piazza, Tabitz rode up. A long dialogue followed. I could hear the sound of their voices, the mild tones of Ford mingling with the angry accents of Tabitz. Master Ford said I had always been a willing and faithful boy with him, that he was sorry we had such trouble, and that he, Tabitz, was himself in fault. He continued, "It is evident enough, Mr. Tabitz, that you and Platt cannot live together. You dislike him and would not hesitate to kill him, and knowing it, he will run from you again through fear of his life. Now, Tabitz, you must sell him or hire him out at least. Unless you do so, I shall take measures to get him out of your possession." Tabitz sold me to Edwin Epps. The latter gentleman examined me and asked me the usual questions propounded by purchasers. I was now no longer the property of Tabitz, his dog, his brute, dreading his wrath and cruelty day and night, and whoever or whatever my new master might prove to be, I could not, certainly, regret the change. So it was good news when the sale was announced, and with a sigh of relief, I sat down for the first time in my new abode.
Rashaan Stone was reading 12 Years a Slave by Solomon Northup. The producer was Kirstine Cameron. Here's Sailing By to take us to the shipping forecast. Thank you. Now on BBC Radio 4, it's time for the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Thursday, the 27th of February. There are warnings of gales in all areas except Trafalgar. The general synopsis at 1800, low Faroes 989 losing its identity, new lows expected Faroes 978 and Shannon 992 by 1800 Thursday. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, north at Sarah, south at Sarah. Southeasterly 5 to 7, occasionally gale 8. Rain or showers, moderate or good. Forties, Cromarty, 4th, Tyne, Dogger. Southwest 5 to 7, backing south 6 to gale 8 for a time. Rain, then showers, good, occasionally poor. Fisher, German Bight. South or southeast, veering southwest.